A comedian turned artist turned comedic artist, this guy's story is truly out of the box. He quit stand-up comedy after a decade on the local circuit and, unsure of what to do with himself, made the unusual decision to hire out a warehouse and start painting. Living on 3 hours sleep for 6 months, letting his imagination run wild and trying to make his dreams manifest on canvas, Sam Kisajukian had no idea he was living in an extended manic episode. Diagnosed with bipolar soon after, Sam went from never having painted before to completing 300 paintings illustrating the lens through which he was seeing the world. He went on to create a unique mental health comedy show built around trying to explain those paintings to the audience, literally putting all his flawed thinking on display to show the funny side and connect.
I mean, there's something about being a comedian that just feels a little bit mentally ill. Like,
and it's synonymous with mental illness as well.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, like, that is synonymous.
A huge percentage of comedians really struggle in various ways.
Sam lives with mental illness, but his story is proof that it's not all bad and that you don't have to be afraid to share who you really are with the world. In fact, people might just love you for it. Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson. I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a thing. Help us reach more people by taking 10 seconds to give the show a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you've got some feedback on this conversation, I'd love to hear it. You can vote in the poll and leave a comment on every Spotify episode. I read them all. This show touches on some tough topics that may provoke strong emotions. If you find anything in this chat distressing, please do whatever you need to do to look after yourself. Sam, what does mania feel like?
Mania feels fun. It's fun to have no fear. You have anxiety, but you feel like you can problem solve your way out of any situation and probably think twice as fast. So you feel very capable, but oblivious. Perhaps you're living in a parallel reality where you're still having effect on the world, but not building up a debt. You don't really know, but it does feel like you might have to pay for this later.
So sort of like being on a drug?
Not really, because I feel like on a drug, you're like, this is recreational. But I think in terms of mania, it feels like you're capable. And I think also it's usually a manic phase will come out of a depressive phase for me. So it's the difference. Like, it's almost like a relief. Like, I'll be wanting to do things and I'll be depressed for so long that I won't be able to function. And I just have this like internal feeling like I can do so much, but I'm held back by this depression. And so I think I need to push. And then usually it's from lack of sleep. And I think I wasn't diagnosed when I first had, I've been manic multiple times, but the last one, which was 5 months, which is very long, it was getting out of a long depressive state. And then once I was in it, I was like, I have to do as much as possible during this time so that when I'm depressed again, I've kind of like collated a lot of,
like, make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, it's like a functional thing for me. It's not like a recreation. I actually do a lot of work during that. Like, I work during that time.
Tell us about that first manic episode back when you didn't actually know what it was.
Well, looking back, I probably had them multiple times in my life to varying degrees because I'm a stand-up comic. And I realize now I quit comedy in June 2021. I've been doing it for 10 years. And I think that doing stand-up and touring was masking the cycles of bipolar, because every day you're kind of like, you're low, and then you get anxious about the gig, and then you have this kind of peak experience, and then you're around a lot of people. It's like, it's almost like has like the natural cycle of like up and down. The next day you're exhausted.
At odd hours.
Your sleep's getting thrown out. You're getting time zone differences quite often. And you're getting a lot of energy from people. And I think people in like a quite heightened state, you know, they might be drinking, or just people after 10 p.m. are pretty rowdy. And so that energy is getting directed at you. So 10 years of doing that, I think that I never really had, I never knew that I had bipolar because I just had a natural up and down. And after I'd toured for 3 months, I'd crash out for 2 months. And I just thought it was because I'd been around a lot of people and I was exhausted. I didn't realize that other people didn't have that. And so it was when I stopped doing stand-up that I think I didn't have that natural regulation. And it, I think it pushed me towards behaviors that would lead to mania.
How did you perceive yourself when you were doing stand-up?
Well, what do you mean by that?
How did you know yourself to be like? Were you an outgoing person? Were you an anxious person?
I think it would vary. You know, like it was almost like different people. Like I guess because you're a comic, you feel like you have this kind of like public face of that's getting pushed, reflected back at you. That's like, you're funny. You know, you're like the life of a room.
And that's what people love you for.
And that's what they love you for. And so like for me, and that's why I quit comedy was because I feel like I'd done it to myself. I had reflected back at me, comedian. And so it was almost like you end up becoming this thing that's like your job. But after a gig, it stays with you. And so it's hard to like shake that. And then sometimes, you know, I'll be depressed, but I'll still have to function from that state. And so for me, like quitting comedy was a lot about like shedding that identity of being a comedian and kind of like refinding like who I am and what I want. It's just funny that when that happened, I then had a 5 month manic episode.
So why did you quit comedy in the end?
I think it was for that reason. I think people say, oh, comedy is my dream. And then I stopped enjoying it. And it's just a ridiculous thing. Like it's funny to do comedy. It's not funny to be a comedian in your mid 30s. Like the act of it, you know, like you're going on stage and you're being like, ah, I've got opinions to like drunk people. Like it's ridiculous. Mm. And so I think if you're not going to enjoy that, there's no reason you should do that. And
yeah, it's a hardcore pursuit, especially if you're trying to make it like your main gig and like 0.1% of people make it on Netflix or they're the comedians that the world knows. But
yeah,
behind that is thousands and thousands and thousands of comics trying to make it who are like on this brutal schedule and just like trying to piece things together, and that would be a shit fight.
It is a shit fight. Yeah. Maybe you get like more and more desperate as you get older because you're just like watching people have kids and you're just like, I am going out on a Monday and doing 5 minutes of something that I came up that day. Like it just feels ridiculous.
And not having that base of stability.
Yeah.
As time goes on, like in your 20s, it's like, so, oh, good. And then as you keep getting older, it gets like less good.
You're like, because not bad.
You're like, fuck, mental health wise, you need to be able to actually have a center to your life.
I mean, there's something about being a comedian that just feels a little bit mentally ill. Like,
well, and it's synonymous with mental illness as well.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, like, that is synonymous.
A huge percentage of comedians really struggle in various ways.
And I think like a little bit, like maybe this is not true, but it felt like it at the time, that you're essentially like comedy. No, I guess people do comedy differently, but part of it is like productizing you're trying to find like your flaws and you know, make them funny and show people. And it's like a degree of vulnerability. But then if you just keep doing that every night, you're telling the same thing. It's like, well, that's not really vulnerability anymore. You've like turned your vulnerability and, you know, to a degree, and I feel this now, is like lived experience of mental illness and sharing that like into a product.
Yeah, into a rehearsed package.
Yeah, and it's like,
and you're like detached from it.
You're detached to that, yeah. And then so in that sense, it's like you're not incentivized to heal because you're being rewarded for trafficking flaws. And so I find this now is, and this is why I've come back to comedy, is I used to want to be a comedian and I thought I needed to get better as a comedian to be funnier or anything like that. But now I realize that I have a skill set of being a comedian for 10 years. And so my job now on stage is to, you know, be a human being and just trust that those skill sets will come out. And actually the real work is protecting myself from adopting the identity of a comedian, both on stage and also after the show. Like when people are coming up to you and be like, that was fantastic, you're so funny. Like not to let that in, just to be like, well, that's it. that's their experience. You know, like that doesn't affect my view on myself. I'm still just
not to get attached to it.
Yeah, a little
not
bit.
Too high or too low.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you. Big time. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, now that I have the diagnosis and I know like it's made life much easier because it's all about time and energy consumption. So I just think like what costs energy and
price you're willing to pay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a value judgment on different situations. So I have like a very strict regimen that I kind of follow to avoid mania.
But having that understanding of what's going on and what you can do to manage it is key.
Yeah.
Because without that, I imagine it's just like free fall. Who knows?
Well, yeah, you're a little pea in the ocean. Just feels like. And also just like for me, it's like not so much like the mania is very bad. But it's like the depressive states. And I think I didn't realize this, but if I avoid, I used to get into the manic states because of the depressive states. And so by avoiding the mania, I don't go as low for as long. And so what used to be like that is now kind of leveling out. And it's been like that for almost 2 years now.
So it was a bounce back effect. You'd be depressed for months and then you would be manic for months.
Yeah, I mean, something to that degree. I mean, it would be shorter than that. It was only when I quit comedy that I had the big one, which was 5 months.
Tell us about that one.
Well, that's a fun one because I rented a warehouse in Sydney. I quit comedy and then I didn't know what to do and I put on a beret and I started painting. I thought I'll become an artist.
So I just decided. Were you depressed after you quit comedy and lost?
I think I was depressed and then I quit comedy and then I was kind of just isolated. I think in my head, I just thought, I'm just going to isolate myself and just figure out what to do next.
And you didn't have a diagnosis at that point?
No, this was in 2021. I got diagnosed in May 2022. Yeah.
So you rented a warehouse?
Rented a warehouse.
Where did the idea to become an artist
come from?
I just
thought it was like an incubation thing. Like if I just put myself in like a concrete bunker, then like, and I just wait, then something will happen. And you know what I mean? Like going back into like a womb, but just like figure it out. You know,
yeah, the hyperbolic time chamber idea sort of.
A little bit, yeah. Like I'll just be a time capsule for a while. And then I started painting. I'd never painted before. My mum is an artist. She's does sculpture and ceramics. And so I think like over my life, I have had influence of art, but no training.
What were you trying to do? Were you trying to make ideas come to you? Were you trying
well,
to
I didn't know.
Out?
I just did a painting and then I did this self-portrait and of me at the age of 70, looking back on myself. And it just felt not easy per se, but it just kind of effortless. I didn't feel that I was trying to make a painting. And I think I liked it because in comedy, you're making something in front of an audience. And so you are aware of judgment and you're told, you know, you got to not care. I do care. I want people to have a good time.
Oh, and that's the most judgmental environment that there
yeah.
is.
Yeah. And it, no, it's great. Like I love it. But it's just, there's something about it that's limiting in the sense that you are making something real time with people that you don't know. And there's a lot of them and you don't know who they are. And so what I liked about painting is that, you know, I'm making something where there's no audience. And so there's no judgment until it's finished. And in a way, like I think when I approached painting, I had this kind of like subject, object, like observer thing happening where I was like, I am the audience looking at the painting and say the painting's the comedian. So I'll make a mark and then I'll look at it as if I'm an audience and then I'll feel like, oh, what do I want to do next? So I kind of created this, in a way, like a conversation between my conscious mind and my subconscious mind. And so I think it was very powerful for me because I got to see things that I didn't consciously know. And then every time I did something, I just realized I don't know where it was coming from. Just so much was coming out. And I kind of just had these like mini breakthroughs where I was like, oh, wow, that means that. Like I started painting my dreams, you know, I never remember my dreams, but they would come out. And then I'd be like, oh, I remembered seeing that last night.
So how long did you stay in the warehouse?
6 months. I mean, I still have it. Yeah. But yeah, I was in there pretty isolated for 6 months. Yeah.
And your experience of mania during that time, like you weren't sleeping much.
Well, what happened was, is I started, I became very obsessed with like, because I thought there were so many, I painted every day, and sometimes I'll do two paintings a day, and they're quite big.
Wow.
Like the work I do now is like usually about 2 meters wide or tall. And at the time I was painting, I got doors from Bunnings and I'd lean them up against the wall. I have multiple out and I'd get rolls of 1 meter wide paper and roll them down the doors. And then I would just paint really quickly so that my conscious mind couldn't kind of process what was happening, and just like stream of consciousness coming out. And then I'd move straight to the next painting. And so I was very obsessed with painting my subconscious. And so what I started doing was like try and see and remember my dreams, but I didn't remember them. So I thought, and this used to happen when I toured, when I'd go to the UK, is that when I was jet lagged for that first week, like I used to lucid dream. And so I thought, what if I flip my sleep cycle every 2 days back and forth? So go to bed at 8 p.m. and then 2 days later.
The lucid dreaming when you're aware that you're dreaming, and then you can do,
yeah, you
do
can
what
see
you
it. You just have access to your memory about it. You can do what you want, but also I just found that I remembered it more. So I just started flipping my sleep cycle every 2 days to kind of like make my mind feel like it was awake when I was asleep. And then when I was awake, I would be kind of like in this semi-delirious state. And it was like incredible in terms of like creative output, because I just became my subconscious in a kind of, I mean, it's a great way to lead to psychosis. Like I know that now, but at the time, and this is what I show now in when I do exhibitions, is like, I just documented my mental states unknowingly for 5 months over 300 paintings. And so I have this like really strong, clear body of work that shows a manic episode from the subconscious.
But at the time, you weren't actually aware that you had bipolar.
No, I thought I was killing it.
Yeah, so did you think you were like a genius doing this?
No, not a genius. I think I was just, for the first time, I felt like I was doing something that was like 100% me. You know, when you're doing stand-up, you're trying to like create this Venn diagram between what you find funny and what other people will find funny. And then this was just for me. And it was a conversation with myself, you know, visually and physically, because you're physically moving. And I feel like a little bit like I rock climbed for like 20 years. And so I have good visual memory and spatial memory for my body. And so I used to paint with the lights really low so that I couldn't like consciously pay attention. I couldn't consciously judge what I was doing. And so for me, but like build a bridge in terms of I was using words for so long to try and understand myself with stand-up and writing. And then for the first time, all the things I couldn't express, like specific emotions or understanding of self, was happening visually. And I realized, like, you know, they say, oh, a picture's worth 1,000 words. It's just like, I feel like in some things you can identify what something is visually or explain it visually, but not verbally. And so I was starting to create this discourse between verbal and visual communication. And so I just almost just having like breakthroughs constantly. It just, then I got too excited about it and it led to mania.
So you were in a flow state?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. It was just like shedding a lot of layers, you know. I just quit being a comedian and then I, you know, had this big vacuum. And then I was excited that so quickly I'd found, like, I just knew I want to be an artist. Like, I was like, oh, this just like feels like me. I don't feel like, it's so weird to find it so late in life. There was just never any doubt.
What did people around you think while you were doing this?
Well, I was isolated, didn't show anyone immediately. And then I did show, you know, the first few paintings that I made. And there was like positive, obviously people were very positive in the feedback. So that was nice. But yeah, I think I wasn't really connecting with too many people during that time. But yeah, later, people have been responding very well to the art, which is nice.
What was the downside?
I think like escalation. I think longer in a manic episode, like the traits of, well, I mean, specifically, it went from art into, I started like trying to invent things. And I started trying to, like, I did this thing where like every day I'd try and invent a new thing and then I'd try and pitch it.
Who would you pitch it to?
Because I thought like Leonardo da Vinci, like, he invented submarines.
Right.
But that was before anyone else thought of it. So yeah. I was like, I reckon I can do that. I was like, I'm going to invent the thing that 200 years from now, they're like.
Yeah.
And then so I just try to invent so much stuff.
The self-confidence was there.
Yeah. And then I started trying to like call companies and be like big companies in the US and just pitch them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had some sort of success with that.
Some sort of success. Yeah. Which was bad though. I think that's the problem I found about Mania is that when you have any kind of like tangible success in the world, it kind of reaffirms that what you're doing is right and that it justifies your state. So a little bit like, I think maybe in the back of my mind, I knew I was manic. I wouldn't consciously admit it, but I was like, well, let's say something's going on, but I'm actually having real world success, then this state is valid.
And there's plenty of that in art.
Well, yeah, the problem is that in art you're safeguarded, really. You know what I mean? It's there. I think also, like, you know, there is something about being in that state, and you know, I know now it's very dangerous, and I actively prevent myself going into those states. But there's something about kind of being pulled apart in that way that becomes, you know, and it, yeah, say you are delusional to, you know, a degree, you are kind of reconnecting with very like primal aspects of yourself. And so I found it very informative. Like the big thing for me is when I came out of it, it just felt like a separate person had done that. And that's when it was horrible because I didn't even have the best memory of it. Like it's great that I had all the notes that I'd written and paintings so I could like revisit and bring back the memories, but it just felt like this other person had done that thing. And so like a big thing for me now is trying to integrate the feeling of me in a depressive state. Cause I feel like sorry, this is a bit long-winded. Yeah.
No, you're right. I think what you're saying is that you sort of conceptualized yourself as like manic you or depressed you, but where is you in between that and trying to define yourself?
I meant more the idea that I've been in depressed states and manic states and fleeting stable states my whole life, that it's almost started to feel like three different people where I'm very comfortable in a manic state. I'm very comfortable in a stable state and a depressed state. And so there almost builds up like when I'm manic, I actually remember other times that I was manic and how I was thinking at that time. So it feels like just slipping back into an old shoe.
And it's like, well, manic me achieved that.
Yeah.
But stable me couldn't.
Well, even just the type of thinking. So it just kind of extends on. And I think that's why for me, like manic episodes have gotten more extreme is because I just lock back in with that. It doesn't feel new. It feels comfortable. And so even depressive states, they are very negative, but they feel comfortable. They almost feel like home because I know the parameters of them. And so this is what I try and do now is I feel like there's specific personality traits that now have and memories and behaviors that start to develop for each of those three states. So I feel like I have three different lenses on the world. And like, I think that's why, you know, perhaps I can't speak for all lived experience of mental illness, but maybe bipolar, is that you have three different viewpoints on the world because you've existed in these three different states. And so you have more empathy for a situational creative problem. You're essentially creatively problem solving life because the society is not set up for someone to kind of approach it from three different states. And so I feel like when you apply that to an artistic pursuit, you kind of have more angles to problem solve from.
So given that's your experience, do you want to be stable? Do you like being that version of yourself?
Well, I think for me now, there's two things. Yes, it is tricky because mania is fun. But I think I thought for a long time, like I had to, once I got the diagnosis, like I was such a close call that I was like, I can't go there again.
Because obviously can be really dangerous. And if you
the longer you're in it,
and if you're feeling like, oh, someone else did that, but that was you, for you, it was creating art, but it could be something really dangerous or something that harms other people.
Well, yeah, or harm yourself. Yeah. And it did lead into psychosis towards the end. And I luckily was able to get out of it right at the last moment. And then, yeah, I think part of it was like definitely like shame and embarrassment. Like I was very embarrassed. Because, you know, comedians found out and they didn't have a word for it. They didn't say, oh, Sam's bipolar. They just said, Sam's a psycho. He's gone crazy. And, you know, it's like, people write you off very quickly. But I mean, I've also found that they've welcomed me back also very quickly. Like comedians have been great about it, but it's more like the perception of what people would think, you know. You feel like you fucked up so bad and, you know, people have lost faith in you and now they just don't know if you're going to be unstable again. You've broken all this trust.
Which if you're already isolated is very bad.
Is very bad. And then when you're depressed, you don't want to be out in public anyway. So you're just like in isolation, dealing with all of that. And so once I got diagnosed, I really wanted to be like, I have to avoid mania and I have to do the right things when I'm depressed to and understand that it'll pass and that. So I don't try and buy into the depression. I don't think like, I just go, look, this will pass. You don't feel good now. Don't do behaviors from this state to try and get out of the state. Just trust that it's like part of your brain chemistry and you'll move out of it. But the big thing for me recently is trying to like remove the shame of the mania and kind of go, well, that was part of me and those things are valid. And, you know, this kind of stuff can happen again. And I have existed my whole life from these three different states. And I'm trying to find a way now to like integrate it together. And maybe that is through like an artistic pursuit, like almost like adopting the traits of manic thinking and their benefits, like, but from a stable state. Like being fearless can have huge benefits. The only downside of it is risk of danger, you know, for yourself or other people. But when removing self-doubt can be amazing for both creative or pursuits in life. And so I'm trying to like just trust myself again that what I did think when I was manic is still me. And it's valid. And I think by thinking of it as shameful.
Yeah, you've got to be able to own all of that.
Yeah.
Because that is your experience.
It is part of me.
You've had those highs and lows and then the stability in between and all of that is your story and that's what you live with and that's your brain. So you don't need to be ashamed of any one part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like also maybe when I was manic, I was like, I'm in this. And then when I'm depressed, I'm like, I'm in this. And then now it's more, I try and just sit back. It's almost like I just try and watch. Like, I'm a bit manic right now.
Like less attached to the
state. I'm like, there is mania happening here and I'm just watching it, but I don't read into it because I think before I would be in it and then I would just go. And now I'm watching it happen and I'm like, I sit back and then I make decisions like, oh, you should go to sleep. You know, and then when I'm depressed, I'm like, you want to lie in bed and just watch nothing.
So rather than being controlled by
it. Yeah.
And being reactive and totally just in at the disposal of whatever of those three you're in, it's being able to take a moment and sit back and say, this is happening now, but I can still make decisions based on that.
Yeah, or that I don't have to make decisions to escape this state, that with time it will pass. Mm. I don't have to change my behavior too much. Like,
and you don't have to hate yourself for being in one or the other.
I don't have to be. So now I plan. Like, so when I tour now, I know I'm going to be around a lot of people and so I know it's going to be intense and I'm going to be stressed and my mind's thinking really quickly. You've got to think quite quickly on stage
because
you're like adapting to what's happening. And so I plan days off now. Before I would just go 6-7 days a week and now if I'm doing 3 nights of shows, I try and take at least 1 night off or 2 nights off. And sometimes it feels like too much time off, but that's better than not enough time off because then it starts to stack and build up. So I'm kind of just sitting back and like reducing my workload and then slowly ramping back up to the intensity of work I was doing before I quit comedy.
How did that diagnosis come about? How did you go from that 5-month period to ending up in someone's office to get that diagnosis?
I wasn't like leaving the depressive state. So the depressive state lasted from, well, pretty much the whole year, but it got worse and worse for 5 months. From January 2022 to May 2022. And I think it had to get so bad that, because I just didn't want to accept that something was wrong with me. I thought that, well, of course, if you're having a high output and that intensity for 5 months, like you would be down. Like I just, for some reason, I thought that having the label of mental illness would be like a negative thing. Like people would judge me. Like I think I was worried about the stigma. I think because I've always been that person, like, yeah, I'm all good. you know, even though I'm not.
You didn't want to be painted with that brush.
I also think I can fix myself. Like, that's how I felt. I'm like, no, I can sort this out. But, you know, you got a wonky tool, it's hard to fix the tool with the tool, you know. Like,
what did it take to be able to change that mindset? Because that's very common, especially
among
men to feel that way.
And yeah.
No matter what happens, we can emotions. Say I'm all good.
Like, oh, yeah.
But you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you able to change that viewpoint?
My partner at the time was fantastic about it. She's just slowly nudging me in this direction to get help. My parents were very understanding. They let me take my time with it, but I think it was through repeated conversations and I'm getting worse and worse that, like, slowly I'm starting to listen.
Did you go to therapy?
I went to therapy and then I went to a psychiatrist, and the diagnosis happened very quickly.
And they put you on medication?
I'm on lamotrigine, Lamictal, and that's it. So that lifts the depression. And so the big thing for me was just, like, accepting that I have bipolar so that I can look at the world. Everyone I told, I was like, I have bipolar. You know, I told like 10 people and everyone was like, yeah, we know. Like, I was like the last person. So I think that's the other thing is, like, with sometimes guys, like, you are the last, you're so bad.
You're the last one to know.
You're like the last one to know, and you tell people and you're like, it's like this big deal for you. And everyone's like, yeah, we've been watching you for 20 years. This is how you are. So
bipolar is also a word that gets thrown around a lot though when it's,
I think
not
it does,
bipolar.
Yeah.
As someone who's a bit hot and cold or whatever, people will say, oh yeah, they're bipolar, or they're a bit bipolar. It
yeah,
doesn't
that's
really
true.
Work that way though.
But also I feel like, you know, being a stand-up comedian, like, that touring schedule can feel a bit like mania and depression.
Well, yeah, because you're supposed to snap your fingers and then be that persona on stage.
Come on, and then you just get stuck in that state.
And you have that high and then it drops away, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think having the diet, like, this is the other thing, is just having information has been very helpful. So the medication lifts the depression. So it's on quite a low dose, but it's enough that it just cuts the edge of the, so I used to be, I'd be depressed for like a week or 2 weeks or a month or 3 months. And then now it's like no longer than 5 days. And so I know that. So I'm just like, also like, oh, just ride it out. You can move out of that. Just do some more exercise, eat well, sleep well. Just, it's fine. It'll pass. And also the diagnosis helps me avoid getting into mania, because any situation I can be like, look at it from my viewpoint. And that's the other thing with having the diagnosis. I don't feel like I have bipolar. I just feel like Sam. Mm-hmm. I was worried I would feel like I am bipolar Sam and this is this thing I have to wear. But I still see the world exactly from my viewpoint. But I also have like another lens to look at any situation through, like, the diagnostic lens of bipolar to make a safe decision. So I now have a collaboration. So like, I might be painting and it'll get to like midnight and I'm like, I should do 6 more paintings and like build a cube around my head. And then you could spin it. It'd be like a dream machine for people. And then I'm like, I should do that while I'm dreaming. So I should do that from midnight to midday. And I've just thought of it and I'll be like, just go. And then I would used to do that. And then now I just step over here and I look at that situation. I go, oh, Samuel. And I'll be like, yes. I'd be like, man, this is great, but do that tomorrow. What about now you go to sleep? And I'll be like, oh, okay. And then I just dodge those bullets.
Yeah, because you know you have to pay the price otherwise.
I know I have to pay the toll.
Yeah, and it took doing that a lot of times before
you
got the message.
Yeah. Yeah, it took a while.
What's it been like to turn this experience into a concept and a show that's been a success that people are able to come to and connect with? Like, you've turned your mental illness into something that works for you rather than works against you.
Yeah, it was a little bit out of necessity, because I started performing again after the diagnosis. And then at the Sydney Fringe Festival, I registered a show. Then I got cold feet and I pulled out. And then the festival called me up and said, they saw the concept of the show and they said, we'd like you to do it. And
was this with the art component or just stand-up?
Well, I did, because I hadn't done stand-up in a year. I was very rusty. And also I didn't know what to talk about. And I was so embarrassed about what had happened. I didn't want to say anything. And then I thought, oh, fuck it. I can't turn this into a show. I think I'm just like, I'll just put on a projector. I'll just put all the paintings I made in chronological order. And I'll just tell exactly what happened from start to finish. Because I started telling people like tidbits of like what happened, and people thought I made it up. They didn't believe me. And out of context, some of the stuff is, I mean, it's ridiculous anyway, but out of context, it's just like, oh, this person's just made this up. And it makes you sound like almost like you're still delusional. Like you're like, oh, I did this thing. And it's like, you haven't even accepted that it didn't happen, but it did happen. You just have to understand everything that came before that led me to that point that I would make that decision. And so in the show, I thought, well, I'll just show exactly what happened. And then I guess it was nice, but I didn't expect it, but it was very well received. And I won Best Comedy in the Director's Choice Award. And it kind of dawned on me that I was like, oh, you can just tell, you don't have to like, I don't have to be a comedian.
That, you don't
like,
have to make it up.
Yeah, well, I don't have to just be like, oh, what's funny? I'll just be like, I'll just say what happens and just trust that like you have the skill set of a comedian. And that there's something out, people really respond to that.
Why do people respond to that, do you think?
I don't know. I think everyone, there's something about the things that you can't express that you feel very alone with. And I think that's probably shared amongst everybody. There's so many things that you can't even express to yourself verbally that you, but you see it in other people sometimes. And so I think like for me, and this is what I do now. I have solo art exhibitions and a stand-up comedy show that I pair together to talk about my experience. And the reason I do that is because I think some people are visual learners and some people learn verbally. And so I feel like by combining the mediums together, it allows me to be more specific when explaining things about like the more ineffable states of emotions and mental illness and specifically bipolar. And so, not that it's been like, I just find like it's more informative to who I am. Like I can be really specific about how I feel about something and what I'm trying to say, because I have both tools available that I feel more heard. And I'm just trying to, I feel like it, like my whole life, because I've felt like so different to people and that like, I just don't understand other people's viewpoint compared to mine, that I'm like, it's almost like I'm very protective of just like wanting to show people who I am, because I just feel like no one's really understood it. And so I think this is why all the arts come out, because I've just found a way to do it. And I've also got 10 years of comedy, like public speaking.
Yeah, a very unique blending of talents.
So bring it, well, it's not so much talents, it's more like methods of communication. And so for me, it's not like, oh, I'm an artist. I'm like, how do I say very specific things that I've never been able to say, I've known and felt. And this is like a very nuanced thing about some, like the relationship between like anxiety and avoidance. Like I have two big paintings that show the narrative, the relationship between anxiety and avoidance. And people have responded very strongly to that, because I feel like it's hard to explain that and to do it visually.
You can get to the core of these things
in a different way
that's like, that's deeper than if you just used your words. Like you can...
More specific to me, but then it's weirdly general. People.
But then obviously you're saying, you know, people coming to your show and they're connecting. So even if that's not exactly their experience, the fact that you've been able to get there and they can see that has an effect.
Yeah, I think it's different for everyone, and I don't try and like, I'm not like, I feel like my perimeter and job, especially with talking about bipolar and lived experience, is like, this is my experience. I'm going to stay in my lane. I'm not making general statements for anybody else. I will share how I think and how my mind works and how I'm trying to conceptualize and understand both what's happened and how I would like to interact with the world. And I show it visually and verbally, and then people can take what they want. I feel like it's soft in the way that I'm not telling people how to think, or I'm just sharing. And that's how I like to experience like art and media, is like to be left with it, that I can kind of cherry pick out things and take my time to reflect on it.
Well, it's the same as this podcast.
Totally.
The point is people sharing their own experience, and no two experiences are the same. But when you listen to it, you take something out of it because it connects with you in this special way that's hard to explain. But you apply your own lens to someone else's.
Totally.
Lens.
Yeah, totally.
And then you can see your own situation differently, or you're able to think about it in a way you haven't thought about it before, and you're able to find the the humor in it as well. And I think there's a release in that. There's a, because yeah. comedy, there's a release anyway, but then yeah. this is so unique and specific. You totally. Incorporating art and mental health. And I think a lot of people who'd be coming to your show would be getting a different kind of release that would be something that people would be looking for.
Totally. I mean, that's the great thing about comedy is that it's fun and it's enjoyable. And so I'm lucky that I have that skill set, because it's almost like the medium, if you just keep things funny, then it's almost like the subtext of what you say can be informative and provide insights. And, you know, people don't have to be like they're being told this intense story. Yeah. They're like, this is fun and funny and there's great art. But then there's like underlying, you can like layer.
And you found a way to remain you and make that an expression of you that is real and honest and up to date.
Well, the comedy serves the goals of and sharing myself, because I know that some things are difficult and you know they could be triggering, and you're essentially talking about mental illness for 60 minutes and showing paintings around that. And so I feel like now my comedy has a job, my comedy skill set has a job of making this as playful as possible, because I feel like also there's like people go, oh, mental illness is a bad thing, and we have to, you know, there's so much stigma around it, but also people behave weirdly. Like they feel sorry for you. And I don't want people to feel sorry for me. You know, I'm in a good space now, and I want to highlight, you know, a manic episode is damaging for the individual, but also objectively, if the person's okay now, it's very funny. Like if you say this happened and, you know, you're not feeling bad for the person, like the things that happened is like pure comedy a lot of the time. Like obviously there's tragedy in there, but the longer you get away from it, you're like, the things I did, like if, and so.
Yeah, and you're shedding light on uncomfortable things.
Yeah.
And you're sort of taking back control in a way as well.
A little bit.
By putting it out there and saying, I'm not embarrassed about this. This is part of my experience too. And now that I'm not in danger and no one else is, if we actually go back chronologically, a lot of this shit was fucking ridiculous.
And
that can be funny, and that can there can be some relief and entertainment in it.
Totally. But it is also like, you know, talk about accessibility, like people that can relate to it can relate to it. But then that's where comedy helps, is people that can't relate to it, it exists as a comedy show. Mm. So they can enjoy it at that level. Mm. And also I feel like it's educational in a sense of people that don't have lived experience of mental illness, but so many people do. Everyone, I feel like that's the thing with mental illness.
If it's not you, it's someone you know.
It's someone you know or someone you care about.
Yeah, or if it's not you now, it might be you in the future as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. You safeguard it. So like that's also what I do in my show is I'm now an ambassador for Sane Australia, which happened in the funniest way. Where a psychiatrist, I get a lot of psychiatrists come to my show because I really like the way that I break down a bipolar manic episode just because of the art. And a psychiatrist came to my show and was like, you should reach out to Mental Health Peak Bodies. They would really like what you're doing. But I didn't know what that meant. Like, I was like, do you just call them? Like, what do they do?
You've done that before.
Yeah, yeah.
With your pictures.
I was like, oh, I can go. So I called up, but I didn't realize you can't call like head off. Like. Yeah.
Because you can't just speak to the CEO.
No, you can't just. So I just called and went to like an answering machine. And then I realized, I was like, how long do answering machines go on for? And then I just like tried to explain.
So you left a message.
I left a message and it like, I was so embarrassed because I was like, hi, my name is Sam Kazuki. I'm a comedian and artist. I have bipolar. I have 5-month manic episode. I made 300 paintings. I'm good. Like I tried to speak really quickly because I realized I didn't have much time.
Yeah.
And then I was like, but now I'm good. And then I won these awards.
This makes you sound really manic though.
Yeah. And then a psychiatrist said that I should call you. Not my psychiatrist. It's a psychiatrist that I met. And then it just cut off. And I was like, oh no.
Did not end well.
It sounded like the most manic call ever.
Yeah.
But then the 2IC called me back. And then we had this 2-hour chat. And she was amazing. And so I now work with them. And something I do at the end of the show is I have like a slide up about Sane Australia. Because for me, it's like, you know, there's a lot of shows about people's mental illness, but it's also like, you have a responsibility, I think, as like a comic, is that, or as a performer, as a public figure, is that like, you know, people can listen to what you say. And like, I'm not a mental health professional. Like, I really, like.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's part of the point. You know?
Yeah,
that's,
but
you're someone who's had this experience, and that's unique. And people connect to the people who've had it. We don't necessarily connect to the science or the clinical side of it. Again, the whole point of the show is like, okay, show me someone who's actually lived through it, so I can learn from them.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I also want to channel people like to be like, hey, this is my story, but if you want professional help, here's a great organization that, you know, has anonymous platforms where you can just talk about what you're going through and they can connect you to like therapists and peer-to-peer support workers.
And that's really important because that could be that person's first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Sat with that or thought of it.
Yeah, I think like just providing channels, because I realize now that that's probably the most difficult thing. Is, I mean, I can speak for myself and, you know, maybe some guys, is that it's like, there's one is like, things are so bad, I need help. And then there's, how do I get help? And then you have to go through the whole, like, booking a psychiatrist. So you're like, oh, I'll just book a psychiatrist.
Or go to the doctor, get a mental health
plan. Then they're like, you got to go to a doctor. So you go to a doctor, you explain what happened. And then they say, okay, we'll put forward an email to a psychiatrist. You get an email back from the psychiatrist. 2 weeks later, it says, oh, we can't, we've got all full bookings for new clients. So you reach out to someone else. And then they're like, we've got one in 4 months. And so it's like, oh, I need help now and I can't get it. And so that's why I feel like it's good to start that conversation, you know, that before you're like, I need help. It's just to like start to have these conversations with, so that you can.
So in that situation, which is super common where you take those steps and then they say 3 or 4 months, we'll see you then. So what do people do in that gap?
Yeah, what do they do? I mean, you got to stick with it. I think that's probably one of the hardest things, is that you almost get so fed up. You almost like have that moment where you're like, I was good enough to try and get help. You feel good, like, I'm going to go get help. And then it gets kind of thrown back in your face where you're like, oh, this is like another hill to climb. And it's even like that with like medication, like you hear about, you know, a lot of people's experience with medication. You think, oh, I'll be on medication and everything will be okay. And then it's like, well, this medication is, we're just doing an experiment to see if it'll work on you. Oh, it doesn't work on you. Come back 3 months later, we'll try this other medication.
Yeah, so you go into it thinking it's just going to be a fix.
Yeah, and it's like,
and then it's
feels
not.
Like an ordeal, but it can be like some people, I was lucky, it happened straight away. And in terms of like the medication and I was off. And then other people can be a long period of time.
But that said, just because it is a journey and it is difficult, it absolutely can lead to some really great results that people should go and make the effort for. Like once you do get into the right psychiatrist or psychologist and you do get the right medication, that's going to make a world of difference. So don't let that put you off. But it is hard when you're having that in-between journey where you're trying to work it out and it's just not fixing itself straight away. And that's the period where you can be like, fuck this, I'm not going
to
do it.
Exactly. But that's why I think like mental health peak bodies, and people don't think often to use them as a platform, but there are so many around Australia and they can also provide like, like in that kind of in-between phase. Like I think that's the other aspect, is like building community and understanding other people's lived experience. So like having like peer-to-peer support workers, you know, therapists, which not psychiatrists, but therapists to talk to. And
there's message services where you can just chat to someone and they can connect you with other services.
Yep.
Other services. There's a really good one in Adelaide called The Next Step Australia, and one of them is a psychologist, but they're actually a messaging service and an Instagram page where people can go to them as a first step and say, I'm having a hard time. They can connect them with a psychologist and they can have that initial chat with them. Like those, and that's a volunteer charity, but those kinds of connectors are so important.
Totally. And I think it's also, you know, starting that conversation with yourself and then with other people in a safe environment where you won't feel judged, so that you can start to get an understanding of like, it's just hard to verbalize a lot of this stuff. And so the moment you get into a psychiatrist, you've got 45 minutes, they don't know anything about you, and you have to explain what's happening. And then they make a decision off that. And that's really scary, that you're getting summed up in 45 minutes and they're going to give you something, a label or something that will affect you, you know, with medication. And so I think like something about just like preparing yourself and
speaking out loud.
Speaking out loud, yeah.
People don't understand often that you can call Lifeline, not because you're suicidal, but just because that's someone who's going to listen to you and give you the time of day, and you'll be able to get those words out and actually articulate it. So you can call 13 11 14 and speak to Lifeline, not because it's a crisis, but just because like you need someone to talk to. If you don't have someone to talk to in your life, you can do that. You can call these helplines in between, and that can potentially help you, help tide you over till you get to that appointment.
Totally. I think sometimes it's great to go outside your like community. You know, that if you're in a certain area and you think like, oh, people around me, I don't want to share it with them or I don't want to help them like this. Yeah. Lifeline, reaching out to, again, like the mental health peak bodies that have these like anonymous servers like SANE Australia, is you can start a conversation that's a bit more, because I think that's the other thing is like, when you're in these states, like for me, it's like, I feel like I know and I feel helpless and I know there, I feel like sometimes I'm like, there are no solutions outside of this. If I can't see them, then they don't exist. And having a conversation with someone either in your community or outside your sphere, I think both are really helpful, that you realize like, oh, I don't know. Like, and it's okay to not know. There's so much about lived experience with mental illness and moving through it. And it's like a long journey that it's like, you don't know. And it's okay to not to know. And you can find out. And then your story starts to get, you start to understand it. And you understand, like for me, looking back now, like that's the other thing, is you look back on your life and you start to see like what the triggers have been, like things that have caused it. And then that helps you in the future. Like even if you don't get a diagnosis or you don't want to, like you could just know you have, you might be like, I definitely have mental illness, but you don't want to get a diagnosis, then get really good. I'm not suggesting you don't, but having conversations are helpful because you need to protect yourself. And so you need to understand. And so you should speak to people that.
And you learn from experience.
Yeah.
And anything you can do to get to the point where you, the pressure's not on you, only you all the time, but you can actually share that load and bring other people into it and help yourself to understand that it's not about the weight of the world crushing down on you at all times.
Yeah.
And you just have to suffer with that until you don't anymore. There's ways of lessening that load, even if you can't get into a psychologist for 3 months or whatever it might be.
Totally. I mean, there's sometimes it doesn't feel like there's amazing people out there that want to help you, but there are a lot, you know, and sometimes it feels hard to find them, but you know, when it can happen quickly, it can take a long time, but you can really find people that, I was just surprised, like with me that.
Especially once you're brave enough to start talking about it. And it might not be like a professional, it might just be someone who you know, who you're friendly with, who has their own experience as well, or is a particularly good listener. And you would never have known if you hadn't started talking about it. It's just, they're really hard to start talking about this.
It's amazing the war stories that you share when you say some stuff, and then someone's like, let me tell you.
And comedy's great for that, especially a show like yours, because I imagine you have so many people coming up to you afterwards wanting to tell you about their own stuff, right?
Yeah, totally.
No. And then you have to have like a bit of space.
Well, a little bit. That can happen. I don't want to shame, but sometimes it does get it. Okay, I love getting emails. Like, I really do appreciate it.
You can't
it.
Turn into a counselor, you know?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm just not a...
Yeah.
I mean,
and your battery is going to get drained by that if you're constantly replying to people.
That's why I'm like, it's not so much that. It's more just like, I don't want to ever have like a negative effect on people. And I understand like I'm playing with fire a little bit by sharing my experience, because then it kind of, you know, I worry sometimes it might validate someone else that might be like, oh, mania is good. It's not.
Yeah, but you're very hot on saying why that isn't something that you should be aiming for, and the downside of that, and that you stay away from that now with good reason. But I think part of the point of your story is you don't hide away from the fact that you did go there and you do understand what that's about. And the experience of that is not all negative. Hence why there's some temptation sometimes to even want to lean back into that. But you've learned that that's not a good way to go. And that's what you're telling people.
Yeah. I feel like I've got a second chance and I dodged a bullet, and you know, I'm quite late in my life. And so I feel like I can, like, I know the track now. Yeah. I know what I need to do. So I just put my head down. And
what's your relationship like with yourself now? Like, has all of this increased your self-worth and self-love? Because it sounds like you put a lot of attention into doing the right things to look after yourself now. And underneath that is you have to care about yourself.
Yeah. I don't think I'm like fully there yet. Like, you know, part of it was like sitting back and just watching the kind of natural cycles happen with bipolar for myself over the last 2 years. I think like before I, because I was very state-based. Like when I was depressed, I was like, how do I get out of this? When I was manic, I'm like, what do I do in this state? Mm-hmm. And so I think I was always worried about like, what makes me happy and just focusing on that. I think now is first time of just like, I just don't think about like happiness. Like I just don't focus on it at all. I just go, what are the things that I can do that are like mental health related to keep me in a stable state?
Can you be present?
Yes, I can be. I can be very present. I mean, painting, very present, and doing stand up on stage. I definitely have like probably more increased anxiety now because, you know, I do overcomplicate things. Like you probably can tell by just speaking to me that
no, I do. You're very articulate.
Yeah, but I get like very convoluted as well. So it like I do make my life very difficult by just like I'll do something and it'll be good. And then I'm like, well, that's something on top of that.
Dream of consciousness.
It's like the manic mind. Yeah. I'm like, let's build the cards up and then so
you have to just try to keep it simple and not take it too far. Yeah, make it easier on yourself.
Like I'm doing a show about a stand-up comedy show about mental illness and my experience. And I also do a solo art exhibition and there's like a digital video art slideshow and I juggle them in tandem. And I've been touring this round, you know, Australia and I'm going overseas with it. And then there's like, that is inherently like consuming a lot of energy. And so I do have anxiety because like I really care about what I'm doing and I feel like it's good. And I feel like there's so many things I can improve about it. And there's so many things I want to do in the future that go off this. That like there is an anxiety, but I think that's like
that's a healthy anxiety.
Yeah, it's just like managing it.
That's just having goals and wanting to do things and not being sure if you can. Like that's a very natural experience. That goes hand in hand with trying to achieve something. Yeah. But I suppose look what you've already done. There's no reason that you can't take it across the world. And you know that other audiences are going to connect with it because we're all human and that's what's at the core of your show.
Oh, that's nice to say.
Yeah.
Thank you for
saying
that.
That's just a fact, man.
Right. This is why I don't know.
But, so where can people connect with you?
In person, on the street.
Just warn you first.
Just warn you. Just approach me with a sign saying, I am connecting with you, Sam. And then I'll know. Instagram is a good one. I have my email on my website, just samkizajukian.com. And feel free to shoot me an email. You can follow me. I post on Instagram, but I don't post on any other social media. Yeah.
All right. I think that was a comprehensive rundown.
Oh, man. Talk about overcomplicated.
Sam, thank you for sharing such a fascinating story.
Thanks, Carl.
Really unique insight into bipolar and comedy and art and the blend of all of those things together. And done a lot of these interviews, but that was different in a really good way.
Oh, so, I appreciate that.
And I'm really happy to see you be able to manage your illness to this degree and have all these goals and be achieving success. I think and also wanting to help other people. I think you're a great example, man. So hats off to you.
I want to shake your hand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Callum.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe.
Thanks to our local business supporters, NBNA Group and Pro Realty Property Consultants.
You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.